Hello, this is Neil Ewers of Ravenswood Productions in Madison, Wisconsin, and this is a podcast on the Olympus DM620 recorder. The intro you heard was one of the many pianos recorded from the Tyros 4 keyboard directly onto the DM620 via line-in. Guess what? It really does work, and we'll have more to say about it later. Now, this is going to be a little bit strange because you're going to hear me do this all over again. In that when I did the main podcast, of which this is an introduction, I was using the omnidirectional microphone and the two cardioid mics, which I did not do at the beginning of the LS7 podcast. So I wanted these to sound reasonably equal at the beginning, or at least I wanted to have set the microphones up in the same manner. So this is the sound of the DM620 in 90-degree stereo with zoom microphone off, no omnidirectional microphone. Okay, so now that we've made it even for comparison's sake, and we've heard both recorders in the same mode to begin with, let's do this all over again. Let's go to the original podcast, and you'll hear me introduce myself all over again. Hello, this is Neil Ewers of Ravenswood Productions in Madison, Wisconsin, and this podcast is on the Olympus DM620 recorder. It's been out since, well, for about 3 months, I think, as of June 2011. And it's a very nice recorder that sells for $149. It's a pretty small recorder. The dimensions are 4.4 inches long, 1.6 inches wide, 0.6 inches thick, 3.03 ounces weight. In the box, you will find two nickel metal hydride rechargeable batteries, which you can actually recharge in the unit. You'll find the recorder, of course, a USB cable, a manual of about 10 pages, which is kind of worthless. It's in print anyway, with no PDF version available. There is a PDF version available for the entire manual, actually on the recorder itself. If you connect it to your computer, you will find a folder called Manuals, and in there you'll find manuals in different languages, and it will allow you to save it as text. There's also a CD including the Olympus software, which you don't really need to use, but you can use it if you like. You can certainly copy the files to and from your computer without it, because the unit simply shows up as a drive on your computer when you plug it in. Like a lot of the other Olympus recorders, it has voice guidance, so the menus speak. It has the three microphones set up with the omnidirectional microphone in the middle and the cardioids on either side, and all microphones are currently on at this point. I'm out on my deck. You can hear the kids playing basketball off to my right. At least I hope it sounds like it's off to my right, because it is. A couple things to get you up and running really quickly. First of all, how do you put in the batteries? If you turn the recorder so that the buttons and the face of the recorder are pointing up, with the microphones pointing away from you, the battery door will be on the end of the recorder toward you. If you find the USB port, right below that is a little fingernail-sized slit that you can put your fingernail in, and you pull down toward the back of the recorder, or if you've got the recorder pointed in the way that I suggested, you pull straight down, it unlatches the battery door, and the battery door actually pops up toward the top of the recorder. When you place the batteries in the recorder, you place them such that the positive end of the left battery is sticking out, the little nub on the end, is sticking out toward you, and the negative end of the right battery is toward you, meaning that the positive end is in toward the inside of the recorder. Simply pull the battery door down, it latches, and you're off and running. By the way, one thing you might notice during this podcast is I keep switching back and forth between the middle mic being on and the middle mic being off. So some parts with the middle mic on sounds like it has more bass, and when the middle mic is off, the omnidirectional mic is off, there is less bass. So how do you turn the recorder on? On the left-hand side of the recorder, as you face the front of it with the buttons, down at the bottom, there's a little long button that almost feels like it has Braille on it. If you slide this down toward the bottom, it's spring-loaded, and hold it for a second or so, and then release it, the recorder will come on. It may take a few seconds to do that, but it will ultimately come on if you've got the batteries in correctly. Pressing up on this button, you hear a click, and it locks the buttons, so that when you're recording or playing back, if you accidentally hit a button, nothing will happen. To turn the recorder off again, simply hold down the button, just like you did when you turned it on, for a second or so, release it, and it'll turn off. And you get a confirmation sound that's different for turning on and for turning off, so you'll know which it's doing. When I first turned on my recorder and it booted up, it gave you the boot up sound, and it asked you for two bits of information. It asked you to decide which kind of batteries you were using, alkaline or nickel metal hydride, and you simply arrow up or down to whichever one you're using and press enter. By the way, the up and down arrows and right and left arrows and enter button are on the front of the recorder near the bottom. There's a squared off area, kind of round, kind of square, with a button on the right, one on the left, one at the top, one at the bottom, and a button in the middle. The up arrow and down arrow are the up and down buttons, the right and left arrow are the side buttons, and the enter button is in the middle, which also serves as a play button when you're playing. The stop button is right above that. There are two buttons, one on the right, one on the left. The stop button is the one on the left. It then asked me to set the clock, which I didn't do because that is done visually, and while there might be beeps that allow you to do that, I didn't want to run the risk, so I just pressed the stop button and got out of that, and it let me proceed normally. Now, the recorder does have 4 gigabytes of internal memory, as I said, but if you have a card, here's the way you put the card in. Again, if you point the recorder so that the buttons are pointing up, and you place the recorder so that the right-hand side of the recorder is pointing toward you. In this orientation, the microphones will be on your right. So if you find the microphones and you feel along the side that's now toward you, which is the right side of the recorder, you'll find the jack, and then you'll find the little door. There is, again, a fingernail slot at the top of this door. You put your fingernail in and pull down. The door opens at a 90-degree angle, so that the part of the door that you feel that's open is in the same plane of the recorder. The card goes in with the lip of the card pointing up. You push the card in gently because it's pretty thin, and you'll notice some resistance as you get it almost in. If you notice that resistance before you get it in very far, then you've obviously gotten it in a little bit crooked and you need to take it out and put it in again. But once you get almost in, it resists because it's spring-loaded. You press it in against the spring mechanism, it locks into place, so that when you take it out, you push it in, it releases the spring, and it pops out, not all the way, but enough for you to get your fingers around it. So once you've put in the card, you simply flip the door back up, and you're ready to go. All right, description. Note, this recorder is almost exactly like the LS7 in terms of its layout. In fact, it is exactly on the front like the LS7 and on the sides. The only difference on the back is that there is no camera mount. And the microphones on top are shaped a little differently. Otherwise, it's the same. So if you've already heard that part of the podcast, you can skip the description part, and with luck, you'll find whatever we do next. There are 3 microphones on the very top of the recorder. 2 cardioid microphones on either side, and an omnidirectional microphone in the middle. They are at the very top, or basically at the end of the recorder. So if you are talking into the end of the recorder, that is the correct orientation for talking into the microphones. Below the microphones is the display, and below the display are 3 very thin buttons. It's getting a bit windy out here now, so I'm going to have to go back inside to finish the rest of this. The button on the left and the button on the right are function buttons, or function keys, labeled in the manual as F1 and F2, F1 on the left and F2 on the right. They do any number of things. Unlike certain other recorders I have had, they can't be changed. They do what they are set up to do. For example, the right-hand function button closes the menu from wherever you are in the menu after saving what you have changed. The middle button is the menu button. Pressing this allows you to get into menus. Below these three buttons are two buttons, the one on the left being the stop button, the one on the right being the record button. They are round, and they have texture on them. Press the one on the right, and the recorder immediately starts recording. Press the one on the left, it stops. When you go into record, it will beep once. If you press the record button again while you're recording, it will beep twice, and you'll be in pause. Press it once again, it'll beep once, and you'll be back in record. Below these buttons are the right and left up and down arrow and the enter key, or play key. The play key will start the recorder's playback function, but unlike other recorders I've had from Olympus, it won't stop it. You actually have to press the stop button to pause the recording. And when you press the play button again, it starts right where you left off. If you want to go back to the beginning of the track, you simply hit the left arrow. What happens if you press the play button more than once while you're playing is that you go into the speed adjustment. And if you use the up and down arrows, you can increase or decrease the speed of the playback, pressing enter, or the middle key, whenever you get to the speed you want, and it stays there. Now, unfortunately, there's no audible way of knowing when you get back to the default setting. The easiest way I know of is to press the play button once to start playing, press it again to go into speed, hold the bottom arrow down until you go all the way down to the bottom, and then count up with the up arrow 5 clicks. What you've done is you've gone down to 0.5, which is a slower than normal speed, and you've gone up to 1 times speed, which is normal. Then you press enter, and you're back to the default speed. Below the navigation buttons are two additional buttons. The button on the left, on the front of the recorder, at the very bottom, is the erase button. If you press it once and arrow up, you are able to erase one file. You simply press enter, arrow up again for yes, press enter again, and the file is gone. If you press the erase button and arrow up twice, it says erase all files. Press enter here, arrow up to yes, and all the files in the folder are gone. If you don't want to do that, you simply stay on cancel, which is what you default to, and you can simply cancel out of that operation. To the right of the erase button is the folder button. Pressing it once takes you to the list of folders, A through E, into which you can place your recordings. Pressing it again allows you to arrow through a higher directory of files. You can arrow through music folder, podcast folder, and recorder folder. And when you get to recorder folder, if you press enter, you'll find that you're now able to read your folders A through E, the 5 recordable folders. Music you can store on the recorder by copying it from your computer. Same with podcasts. On the right-hand side of the recorder, right below the microphones, is the microphone input jack for an external microphone, and below that is the micro SD card door that we have already described. Way down at the bottom, there is a slot for a lanyard. I don't have mine connected, and I'm not sure how it goes in, but there is some way that the lanyard actually fits into this little slot. On the left-hand side of the recorder, at the very top, right below the microphones, is the headphone output jack. Right below that is a sub-mini jack for the remote control that you can get for this unit. It doesn't come with it, but you can purchase it separately in order to be able to remotely use the recorder. The only other thing on the side of the recorder is the on-off switch, which I have described earlier. On the back of the recorder, there is the speaker. There's a long rubber object at the bottom of the recorder and a couple rubber feet at the top of the back, which is really kind of nice because these keep the recorder from sliding around when you put it on the table on its back. While I'm not going to discuss the menus fully, let me talk about a few things that you can do in the menu. In the record menu, you can set things like what kind of format you're using, WAV, MP3, WMA. You also set microphone sensitivity. And here's my preference, not that you have to follow it. I hear a lot of people use these recorders on mid-mic sensitivity, which is what it defaults to. And often, the recordings are loud enough that it doesn't allow the automatic gain to work properly, and there's often distortion. So I always use low mic sensitivity, which may mean that I record lower in volume than people who use the mid-mic sensitivity. If I have something like Goldwave or SoundForge or Sonar or Studio Recorder or Audacity, I can adjust the volume and would prefer to do it that way. But this way, keeping the volume low means that I'm less likely to distort. If you go into the menus and arrow up twice, you get to Display and Sound menu. If you enter on this menu choice and arrow up a couple, you get to Voice Guidance Settings. Now be careful because one of the options is turning it on and off, and you don't really want to turn it off. But there are a couple other options you might want to deal with. One is the speed of the voice. You can change that, I believe, through 5 settings, and either speed it up or slow it down. Another is the volume of the beeps, the beep that it makes when you press record, when you press stop, etc. You can change that volume as well. And you do this by getting on the choice you want to be on, pressing the enter key, and it says that that particular item has been set. Then if you don't want to do anything else in the menu, you simply press the right function button to get out. Or you can stay in the menu and set other things. And now let's have some fun. Let's play with some sounds and play with some different microphones and see what we can discover about this recorder as it relates to microphones and other recorders. This next test is a very telling test. Actually, a very interesting display of 4 different recorders. I'm going to play a bit of music recorded on the Tyros 4 into this recorder, the Olympus DM620, next, the Olympus LS7, next, the Sony PCMD50, and last, the Zoom H4N. Take a listen and see what you think. These are the in-ear microphones from Sound Professionals. There's a very low-pitched dehumidifier on downstairs. Let's see if you can hear it while we listen to noise. Once again, I sound muffled because these are in my ears, facing totally the opposite direction, so it's as if they're inside my head. I'm going to go out and see what's outside here like I did before on the LS7 podcast. Everything seems to be in the left channel today. Nothing off to the right, and it's very chilly out here. Boy, this has been the most weird year. All right, let's test out the auto gain with these microphones. I'm going to go open this door. Open the second one. Ouch. First one hit me in the rear end. Not nice. Here comes the screen door. And here is the metal door. The one with the mirror on it. All right. These are these microphones. Let me do a test with the Audio-Technica AT-822s like I did before. And this is the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone in the echoey, quiet room. Bit of noise in the background. Mic still sounds good. And I really like this mic, as I said before. The angle is different. It's 110 degrees, I believe, as opposed to 90, so it's a little wider. It's not changeable. It is fixed. I don't believe this microphone is available. I think you can get them on eBay. Audio-Technica has come out with newer ones, but at least this is the one I've been showing in many of my podcasts. So it's a good way to compare the same mic with different recorders. All right, this is the AT-822. Let's see what else we can go find to play with. Actually, we could take this outside, I guess, and see what's out there. I am on high mic attenuation with this microphone because it's a very low-powered output microphone. And that's also probably why you hear as much noise as you do. These recorders aren't as good with those low-powered microphones as they are with louder mics, which make up more of the signal and cover up more of the floor noise. Well, I guess that's about all that's going to happen out here is a few birds are singing and it's cold. I mean, why should I freeze myself just for the sake of science, right? I mean, I was hoping a giant semi would go by, but that would be the first one in this neighborhood in about a year, so it's a pretty quiet place around here. Not a lot of traffic except off in the distance. Of course, when you want it, it doesn't show up. And while I'm on high mic sensitivity, I might as well test the Electrovoice RE635 microphone. A microphone I've had for about 35 years. You hear a hum. That's not the recorder. That's my mic cable. But let's listen to noise and try to forget about the hum. It's certainly doable. And if you could record in mono on this recorder, that would be nice. The only thing you can do is record on Zoom 6, which is a narrowing of the stereo spread, but it's still in stereo. But of course you could change this in the post-production with SoundForge, Studio Recorder, etc., because it would be quieter in that you'd only have one channel of hiss. And these are the DPA mics, still on auto gain. And it's raining. I'm out on my front porch, and if a clap of thunder comes along, it's going to really knock the auto gain down. But so far, I haven't heard any thunder. So the DPA mics work, I think, basically, except for increased noise in the DM620. The mic preamps work about the same. I could go to manual and go back in the house and do what I did before and rattle silverware and see if that works. And I'll probably do that. But let's listen to the rain for a while. Enough rain. I guess we'll go play around with these mics in the house and see what happens when we do our silverware test. If you listen to the podcast for the LS7, you'll understand what I mean. All right, I'm on manual record. I'm four up from the bottom. I'm going to rattle these knives, and I'll tell you why that's important in a second. Why that's important is, as I said on the LS7 podcast, is that that is a critical recording. If you can do that, and you can be around zero without the mics overloading the microphone preamp, you're in pretty good shape for going off and recording louder sounds, be it trains or whatever. Now, the bass response might make a difference too, and we didn't really test that on either recorder. The question is, though, how much floor noise does it bring up? Because I'm down on number four. I just normalized my voice to zero. The question is, how much noise did it bring up from the floor? Now let's go back to auto gain and normalize and see if there's any difference in the microphone noise level. And that's what we've done. We are now on auto gain, and you can hear the rain on the roof. Let's go into the garage. I bet it sounds nice on the garage. Rain on the roof of the garage. Well, let's kind of let up a little bit. But you can hear that these microphones have a pretty good spread. I actually have them in a headband, and I can adjust the angle of them. Not easily, but it can be done. So I can point them straight out, I can point them forward at 45 degrees, etc. We're now back to the internal mic. There are a few sort of last things I want to tell you about before we close this podcast. One of the things you can do on this recorder, as you could on the LS7, is to set presets for how you want recordings to be. If you hold on the menu button for a second or so, you'll go into the scene menu. You have record scene and playback scene. Here's where you can either choose one of their preset record situations, where it might be MP3 on mic sensitivity 2, etc. And they're labeled with such things as conference and lecture, and I don't know exactly which they are, but it would be easy enough to go into them and then explore the menus and find out. Or you can set your own presets. Let's say you wanted to record in manual record. So you set the recorder to manual record, you go into the scene menu, you go to recording scene and press enter, and you find save, and you press enter again. Then you get the choice as to whether to save this preset in user 1, 2, or 3. And let's say you press enter on user 1. Now every time you go back and go into this menu and select user 1, it will go to that particular recording setting you've picked. User 2 and user 3 could be totally different settings. Same with playback. You can set different playback scenes and have reverb on or off, or any number of things you can do in the playback menu. As on the LS7, this recorder also has some microphone zoom settings. In a lot of recorders, you can actually physically move the mics from 90 degrees to 120 to whatever. On this recorder, you can't. They're stationary, but electronically, they figured out a way to sort of replicate that. One of the settings is zoom off, and that's what it comes defaulted to. And that means you're just using XY mics at 90 degrees. If you go into the record menu and arrow down to zoom, as you go up, you go to zoom 1, zoom 2, zoom 3, zoom 4, and those are narrowing the stereo spread. If you go down below zoom off to wide 1, wide 2, and wide 3, those are widening the stereo spectrum. So you can decide, based on playing around with it, where you want to have this set, and either leave it there or change it or add it to one of your record user presets. What you've been hearing as sort of little intro music all through this podcast has been recorded on the Tyros 4, and as I said, it was recorded via line-in. If you have a unit with a nominal line-out signal, which means that it is set at the factory at a standard volume and you don't have any output volume to change, It would be reasonably impossible to record via line-in on this recorder. However, if the output you have is associated with the volume, for example, what I did on the Tyros was plug it into the headphone output, which has a volume. And if you turn the volume of the playback unit, in this case the Tyros, low enough, and get the volume of the recorder at the right level, you can make some pretty nice recordings. It's still a mic preamp, so they'll have the mic preamp noise, which if you're recording a loud enough sound you won't hear, but it is noisier than your normal line-in recording. In my case, I went to manual record, set the recorder at 4 clicks from the bottom, and found the appropriate level on the Tyros headphone output, and away we went. Works like a charm. And yes, line-in recordings are also possible in this manner on the LS7. One of the other things you can do on this recorder, which you can also do on the LS7, is erase a part of a file. If you're playing a file, and while it's playing you press erase, you create a start point. You then play until you get to the place you want to have the end point, press erase again, and press erase the third time to erase the part of the file that you've marked. Or, if you want to erase from where you are to the end of the file, you play and you press erase at where you want the erase to start, press the right arrow to get to the end of the file, press erase again to set the end mark, and press erase again to erase that part of the file, and it's gone. You can't erase to the beginning of the file, but what you can do is you can split a file. You can actually go into the menu, add a point in the file where you want to split the file, and go into the file menu and find split, and press enter there, and all of a sudden you have two files. When you start playing back, you'll hear the first file first, and then what is now the second part of the file. And maybe you simply wanted them as two files, or maybe you wanted to get rid of one of them, in which case you can start playing back the one you want to erase, and erase it. You can also read audible books on this recorder, and there are some sample books on the recorder for you to listen to. Well, they're really not whole books. They get you to a point where you want to read more, and then you hear beep beep, because the file just ended. I guess that's one way to get you to buy a book. Anyway, that's another thing you can do with this little $149 recorder. Not a bad deal, I don't think. One other minor thing that isn't so minor. Like the LS7, this recorder, when it boots up, tells you the status of the battery immediately. So you know not only the status of the battery, but you know when it's finished booting up, which doesn't take very long at all. Now, I know I'm going to get asked in email, so I might as well answer it here. What are the major differences between the LS7 and the DM620? I will list the ones I found. First of all, there's no record standby on the 620. You simply press record, and you start recording. You don't go into I can monitor this situation and see where I want to set my mics or see how far I want to be from the mic and then press record again and have it start. Whenever you press record, it starts recording. As a result, there's no pre-record. Unlike the LS7 where you can, if you're in record standby, hear something and you say, oh gosh, I wish I had started recording. Oh, quick, start recording. And it will go back and get the last 2 seconds of what you heard out of the record buffer and place it in the file. Can't do that with the DM620. The DM620 only has one bass roll-off position. I believe it's the 300 Hz roll-off. It's quite severe. The LS7 has 300 and 100 and off. The sampling rates don't go as high in the DM620, although you can do 48 sampling rate, and I think it's 4816, which is still better than CD quality. You can't go to 82 or 96, but as I said in the LS podcast, there is very little difference that I can hear. Maybe you can, but there's very little difference I can hear in the higher sampling rates on that recorder. On the 620, there's no limiter or compressor when you're recording in manual record mode. Supposedly there's one on the LS7 which doesn't work, and hopefully they'll fix it, but there just isn't one here. It's either manual or auto, and that's all you get. Their auto gain control works extremely well. on both recorders, and I really haven't seen much of a difference in the recorders relative to the auto gain control. In the LS7, you can turn plug-in power off to save batteries, and supposedly with plug-in power off when you don't need it on external mics, you get a quieter signal. I haven't really played around with that. In the DM620, plug-in power is always on, and there's no off option. In the LS7, you could actually go into record settings and choose 44.1 16-bit mono, and you actually could record a mono file. In the DM620, you can go to the narrowest zoom position, which is zoom 6, which sounds almost like mono. It is still a stereo file, but there is no ability to record strictly in mono. And if you've listened to both podcasts, you know the difference between the microphones. They are brighter here. There is more microphone noise. They both have the center omnidirectional microphone to add more bass. And as I said earlier, they look just about the same, except for a few minor things like the camera mount hole on the back of the LS7, which doesn't appear on the DM620. Those are the only differences I can find. Well, I guess I could check my mail out here while I'm out on the porch. I'll look in my mailbox and... somebody sent me a toilet. How about that? Well, you know, I had to do it because I recorded it on the LS7 podcast. And, of course, there's also one other thing. If you only knew how close I came to dropping this recorder down the garbage disposal, oh my goodness. That would have made an interesting sound until somehow the recorder stopped working. All right, enough silliness. Let's close this podcast before I get even worse. All right, I believe that's all we need to cover, as I'm out on my front porch with the birds singing and somebody vacuuming their car down the block a ways. As I said, this is a really very nice recorder for the price. It does a lot of things. It does them very well. It's the DM620 of Olympus. You can buy it at any number of places. And if you have questions, I'm sure the people you buy it from will be happy to help you. If not, send me an email. I'll see what I can do to help out. The email address is neil@ravenswood.org. Okay, you heard a bit of rain earlier in the podcast, and I'm going to end with that. I was out on my porch last night with my DPA microphones, recording part of a really nice thunderstorm on this very recorder. I was on manual record, volume 4 up from the bottom, and there wasn't really loud thunder, so I did have to bring it up in the post-recording process, but I think you'll be interested in hearing how well this recorder actually does in that situation, given those microphones and any number of microphones you can purchase. So this is Neil Ewers saying goodbye and fading away into the night, into the thunderstorm that's going on in the background. See you later!